Got some callers on the line, so let's just go ahead and hop right in. This is a person I've been wanting to give the floor to for quite some time, who's always calling in with some great information. Richard, line one, are you there?
Yeah, how you doing, man? Appreciate you.
Doing all right.
I got in early tonight, like you said.
Yes.
Yeah, I heard you talking about your situation when you were homeless. And being a vet, that saddens me because I know how it feels. I've seen other fellow vets come homeless. But I've always posed the question, what do you think would happen if people took that great information? I mean, it's untouchable, even though Walter Burian was the first person to expose. I'm talking about the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. But Clint Richardson, one of your fellow RBN associates, I guess he's still on the air, I'm not sure. He took it to another level. He created a 20-part documentary showing that they got over $100 trillion plus, and it's always growing, in the CAFR, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. And he showed in great detail, line items, showed what city, what state, where all the bulk of the money was, what corporations they're hiding the money in. So my point is, in relation to the vets, what do you think would happen if all the vets start surrounding the comptroller's office, because he said that's where the money is really being, if you wanted to really check the records, that's where the money's at for every city. They keep it, we'll just say, registered in the comptroller's office. What do you think if all the veterans who are homeless, and everybody else too, because it's really the taxpayers' money, start surrounding all of the comptroller's office in the United States and demanding the release of that money back to the people? Because they've been stealing it for, 50 years, 60, 70 years, and it belongs to the people. They've overtaxed us, and Walter Burian made it clear at the end of every show back in the 90s when he was a regular on the air, he would always make it clear that if you did not understand the money and the figures that he was throwing around, then he would sum it up by saying every man, woman, and child who was ever born in the United States could get a $10,000 check, and the money would never run out. Now, he made it clear, of course, you can't just cut checks like that and destroy the world's money supply. But the point is, nobody should ever be homeless.
Well, in my personal opinion, what would happen, I think that the government would own up to all of its global debts and then default us if it ever came down to that.
Default us? You mean like that we would go into like bankruptcy or?
Yeah, that's exactly what they would do.
Even with $100 trillion? So you think $100 trillion could be? Would be
exhausted? Well, they'll pour it into war, like they always do. They'll kick out the rest and war budgets, start terroristic bombings and all that stuff, and make us fight a 9/11 war, several of them at once, more than likely.
Right. Let me make sure I understand you. So you're saying, rather than just give the people the money that they owe them, and we're talking about reparations. I tell black people this all the time. Instead of asking for reparations, why not get reparations for everybody? Black, white, Chinese, Indians, Filipinos, Mexicans, Japanese, and get some of that money. But you're saying they would rather start a war than just cut a check, or, you know, not even a check, just give us some kind of tax relief, or never, like Walter Burian would say, to keep it simple, just never charge another penny in taxes. And Trump showed us how that worked. Trump gave us the best example when he started lowering all these excise taxes and, you know, import-export taxes. He showed the immediate effect of that is nothing but growth. And we got several examples of that in going back multiple presidential when people would, certain presidents would lower the taxes, all of a sudden the revenues would start coming in. But it sounds like you're saying they would rather just send us in the total meltdown than just pay the people the money. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. They don't want us to prosper. They
think
of us as useless eaters. They want us gone. They want us dead.
Suppose we approach it in a way like if like you guys, you have a show and there's multiple other shows. If we never let up, because you guys are growing, you know, you may not feel the growth yet, but like people like Alex don't always defer to him because he's the number one guy. They thought they got rid of him and he's as big as ever. So if people like you and other shows that come before and after you push this point, you know, let the world know there's $100 trillion and it's hidden in plain sight in the comptroller's office. And this became a regular talking point every day, just like racism's a regular talking point every day. You still think they would be able to keep that money hidden and have fake wars? Because I think it's the way we approach it. Like if the Mets were showing up with signs saying, we know the money's in there, release up, you know, whatever. I'm just talking up. So I think if we don't let it die, then they'd have to eventually approach this in the proper way and just release the money and let the
economy. We would have to go into a civil war. We would have to start assassinating presidents. We'd have to start assassinating governors. The police would become militarized. We'd have to have our militias. We'd have to go into a full-on civil war. They will not let us, because they will deny that money is there. They'll deny it until they're blue in the face. Even if you prove that it's there, they will come up with a lie. Because you have to understand the nature of these people. They want us struggling. And when you have, I mean, that's the point of this virus that they engineered and this pandemic. They clear out the riffraff. They want the homeless dead. They want people, because we are in a state of communism right now. People don't understand that. We are in a state of communism.
Communism.
You know, for those who have, great. For those who don't have, okay, you're going to get on a social program. And we're all, nobody is advancing right now. Now, I'm going to address what you just said. We are growing. We are in the middle of a merger, a media merger, where yours truly is going to be the head director, or one of the directors for Talk TV that's coming up. Yeah, we're going to have our own InfoWars, basically, where I'm the director and my show is pretty much going to be the vanguard. I'm collecting other hosts right now who want to have TV shows, and we're going to be producing these people with their TV shows, and we're all of the same, likeness in mind, and the goals that we are trying to achieve in exposing this crime. So the information can get out, and I'm glad that you offered that up as a solution, because that is something that's another dagger and the belt right there that we can use.
But that's a beautiful thing that you're proposing and getting ready to start. You know what? But I also think, I don't think that they have as much power. Yeah, I understand their nature, believe me. I've been doing this 30 years, going way back to the 80s. That's why I got out the military in 91, because I realized then that we really are going to work. The build up to the war, we were exercising all over the world. I even went to Germany to get some 3 months worth of exercise in before we hit the Middle East, before for Father Bush. And not, so I understand their nature. Then I lived through the Vietnam War and the North Korean War. But, I mean, the Korean War. But the point is I'd like to make, too, if we got the world religions involved in all of our issues, I mean, I understand, you know, we all feel pretty abandoned by the world's religions. We've talked about that. But if we got them back involved, instead of saying they sold us all out to the 501c3, if all the listeners, and there's plenty of them out there, you've acknowledged them, why don't we start saying, inviting them back into the game like they did in the 60s? Remember, I'm a child of the 60s, and I saw Martin Luther King. I'm from Alabama. I saw Martin Luther King and his movement, and, you know, everybody else who was involved, SNCC and all the rest of them. I saw them involve the world's religions, all of them, even though they completely disagreed with each other on whose God was real and whose God wasn't. They had Catholics out there, Buddhists out there. If we involved the world's religions in everything we did and told them, look, bring your parishioners, whatever your church members, whatever you want to call them, bring them to the next march, the next gathering, the next whatever it is, petition. We got to get them back involved, man, because everybody knows, history knows that it was always some kind of religious leader of some kind, be it a shaman or some kind of witch doctor or some form of religion was always there to check the royal powers, whatever they were, kings, sire, you know. So we got to get that balance back, to just throw religion away because they've exited the battlefield. I got that. But we got to, all the listeners right now, like, you got a lot of people who call in and say they're Christians, but how many of them invite their church to actually come out and be involved in the movement like they did in the 60s? They just don't do it. So we got to start insisting that they do it to give you guys more muscle. You know,
they have thought about that, Richard. That's why we have COVID-19. You know, Christ heals all except for that COVID-19. That was time for King. No, thank you. COVID-19. So, I've had, for example, Pastor Bill McGregor on the show, and I've asked him the same question. You know, what's going on with the idea of, you know, the awareness of this new world order with your Christians? And, you know, I'm just hearing, you know, turn the other cheek, God will take care of us if we all have to die. And I'm thinking to myself, it ain't got to be like that. Where are the Christians at that are, you know, praise God, pass the ammo? I'm looking for those Christians.
Yeah, because I'm like you. I never let them get away with that. I have a lot of debates. Everybody's like, no, we already know that turning the other cheek and all that is fine and it's in words, but it don't work in reality. So I never let them get away with that. But, you know, we got to get them back out. We got to get them back in the game, man, because that's going to, you know, I mean, we need people. We need our Black Robe Regiment. That they started it, and we need to help them. We need them there to help us finish it. I mean, they were part of the Revolutionary War. We know the history of that. They were always on the front line, loading it or whatever. And now we just letting them get away with little shameful lines like turn the other cheek. That sounds like wimp talk to me. That sounds like, you know, soy boy talk to me. That don't sound like no.
That's soy boy talk.
That's literally cop-out talk. Yeah. I mean, I can't let them get away with that. It's like, because I tell them right away, I say, so if I punch you in your mouth and start digging in your pocket, you just going to open up all your pockets? You know, I never let them get away with that. So we can't let them get away with that. That's just lame, man. Like I said, I drive around all night. I drive by church after church. There's literally a church. I'm not exaggerating. Every 3 or 4 blocks, I pass some kind of storefront church or a mega church. And they all are closed because Bill Gates, our new doctor, our new king, and Obama and Fauci and whoever else you want in there, told them to shut their doors. I got one right next to us, right here at Papa John's on Wells Branch in Austin, Texas. I'm not afraid to say it. I don't care if Shaq come out. Come after me, Big Shaq. Come on, buy this. See, Shaq likes to brag that he bought several franchises of Papa John's when the N-word went out. I don't know if you know that story.
By the way, you know, small world, I used to work at that Papa John's. I was driving from that Papa John's too.
It's what, right here in Wells Branch? No kidding, okay? So you know Melanie and all that. It's a small world, man.
It's a small world.
So you know what I'm talking about. It's a church. Now, they've expanded. You probably remember they had a church in the middle of the block. Now there's one right on the end headed west, and it's like a community center. The church part is in the middle of the block, and the community center is right on the end, right next to us, Papa John's, and they always got women and children in there communing and, you know, babysitting each other's kids. But as soon as COVID hit, they shut all their operations down. That whole corner went black. And I don't know if you remember the donut shop, Raggedy Ann's, the beauty shop, all of them shut down except for Raggedy Ann. And right next to us, a Hispanic restaurant moved in about 2 years ago. I always compliment them because they never shut down. I let them know. I said, now, it's people like you that's going to keep this whole economy afloat. But the point I'm making is I get a little out of control here. I get emotional. I'm sorry. The Wells Branch Community Church, I'm reading it right now. It says Live for More. That's the name of the center. They shut their doors down last year, and they open up maybe every month or so. And, you know, I guess they go over their books or whatever. See, we got to stop letting them do that. Because I tell them, it's like most of them don't even bother to talk. But when I do talk to them, I say, why did y'all shut your doors? You know, what was your point? You let the devil tell you to shut down God's front door to his house? You know, and they look at me like I'm crazy. But I don't let up because I'm too old to be embarrassed, you know. I don't buckle because somebody gets a little uncomfortable. But we gotta order them back out onto the battlefield. But, hey,
I absolutely agree. We should. I'm reeling right now because, yeah, I used to work at that Papa John's. I also delivered pizza for Domino's, and I was a gas station manager at the Chevron on Lake Creek, 183.
Okay.
Over there. I had three jobs all at the same time. I was working like a dog.
That is truly amazing. I'm sitting right in front of it right now, and I'm waiting for the guy to come and tell me that there's a pizza ready. And it's so bad now, the head lights that went out, the big Papa John sign, it burnt out a month ago, and they won't repair it. You know, because of the N-word floating through the, you know, I'm so I guess you know about what happened with Snyder, right? He floated the N-word, but he only had a conversation about it. He didn't actually use it in the door. So since then, the drivers, the managers, everybody at the lower level has suffered in the worst kind of way because people have somehow displaced the anger to the low-level workers. And even though Snyder's been, his name's been cleared, Jack just won't do what needs to be done and call a press conference and say, look, it was all, we'll just call it fake news. He won't do that, but he was quick to come out when the charges were bought. So now I'm sitting out here waiting for a pizza every other 30 minutes, hour. You know, it's not like it was when you were here, whatever year you was here. It was a pizza every 5 minutes, and I left every day with at least $60, $70, $80 in my pocket. I got one pizza last night. The night before that, I got two. And it's all because of the repercussions of the fake N-word floating around that every comedian uses, every disc jockey uses, MMM uses it. Hell, DMX, I'm sure that was probably his last word, his dying breath. Because he probably realized, I've been vaccinated to death. I mean, we're a joke. We're playing. I mean, let's just face it, brother. We're playing ourselves. And the globalist is playing us. Everybody's playing us, man. Our churches are playing us. But at the end of the day, it's them boulets that's playing us worse than anybody because them black boulets, they get their marching orders from the very top. You know,
I definitely wanted to get into that a little bit more. The boulets. I've got to have a better description of these people. I really want you to get me and my audience aware of the boulets.
No problem, brother. I'm glad you asked. Let me honor a young man by the name of Steve Coakley. Now, he's out of Chicago, and he died about 5 years ago. I believe he was poisoned and murdered because he was one of those guys that would always bring up the effect, the boule effect. He would give the history of them, and he would tell you exactly, you know, what the latest, we'll just say, scheme that they were a major part of. And he would see Jesse Jackson and literally see him in public, and Jesse Jackson was aware of it. And he said Jesse Jackson would see him and turn and run the other way, because he was one of, along with Representative Cynthia McKinney out of Georgia, and everybody, I'm sure you guys, I'm sure your audience knows who Senator Frank Church, the Frank Church Committee, and Dick Gregory, the now deceased world-famous comedian, who he was the first millionaire comedian, matter of fact. All three of those guys made sure that they talked about the Boule, and they talked about Jesse Jackson being part of the assassination of Martin Luther King. So the Boule are really, they're the people who, they get the signal from, you know, that window up top, you know, when they call the plays in the NFL. They're the quarterbacks mm-hmm. down on the field who actually take the field. But let me give you more history, because people need to know what their grassroots are. They were starting.
Well, hold on. I want to also add, I did a show years ago, and I put out the possibility of Dick Gregory being assassinated, you know, because the CIA has that, you know, the heart attack ray gun. It seems like anybody who's saying anything important comes out, you know, in a casket from a heart attack.
Right.
I really hope to have some countermeasure to the CIA heart attack ray gun one of these days. But yeah, please, go ahead, continue.
Well, you know, they said he checked in with a low-grade infection in the hospital, and then he never came out. I don't know how infections... I mean, I know he was an elder, but he was living a good life. He was no longer an alcoholic or a smokeaholic, and he knew what type of, you know, we'll just call them natural ingredients to take. So I don't believe his death was natural either. I'm like you. But until the proof comes out, I'll just leave it like that. He was like Dr. Sabi. The question mark is still there. But yeah, the Black yes. Boule started by a bunch of super elite blacks, and I don't want to completely disrespect these guys, because they learned how to survive in a totally racist world back then. A lot of them had high yellow skin, and, you know, they could pass for white, or they were sophisticated enough with the language to, you know, finesse their way into, we'll just say, prosperous positions. You know, they went through the university systems. So they started this elite group, and, you know, which was accepted by the white elites, because they saw an opportunity to use that group. And that's what they did. So the Black Boule is a legitimate organization. But like I said, when I went to the University of Washington, I said this on the last phone call, I got a chance to experience them firsthand without even knowing what I was experiencing. I was a young 18-year-old, and I noticed that when I would go to the gym to play ball with all my old lifetime friends, all of a sudden, they were in new groups called Pi, Sigma, Beta, Alpha, whatever. You name the group, they were with different groups, and they were no longer talking to each other. And I was wondering why, you know, it's like, didn't we all grow up together? But I found out 40 years later, it's because we've been separated by this Greek organization called whatever, you know, you pick your group. They all got their own song, their own dance, their own flag, you know. And I just happened to be at the University of Washington in Seattle, but they're all over the place. You know, you go to the South, they're historically black colleges. They all got their own little group. And they don't communicate with each other. Every now and then they go to clubs and they commune and hang out. But they form this separate body, and it keeps black folks at each other's throats. But like I said on the last call, after they go through that, matriculation process, then they meet up in the business and the professional world 10, 15 years later with all their elite degrees, and now they're all back on the same team. You know, one of them might be working for CNN. The other one might be. The best example I can give, too, is a black lady by the name of Marsha Lynn Jurgen Allslot. She works for the Center for Disease, and she's the young lady that I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I don't know if your audience would be. William Thomas, the whistleblower for the Center for Disease, he mentions her in one of those, we'll just say, upper administrators who was burning the proof that the measles, mumps, rubella, that trifecta was poisoning young black boys and giving them, putting them on the autism spectrum, depending on how bad the disease was. And it was up to 340 higher than the average group of, and he made it clear it's because of our thin blood-brain barrier that for some reason nature provided. I don't know, it's because we come coming out of Africa or whatever. But the point is, Marsha Lynn Jurgen Ocelot is one of those black boules. She was the first graduate out of Emory University. That's a high degree. You know that. So, but she's one of those people that floats under the radar, but people don't know how she's directly responsible for the death and the mental retardation, or whatever you want to call it, of millions of black boys now. It's probably up into the millions. And that's what spurred William Thomas to come out and talk about it, because his conscience was bothering him. But the name Marsha Lynn Jurgen Ocelot should resonate with people. People should go look her up, because she is literally an assassin of black people.
I am definitely going to look into that more. I've got a question for you. What about this co-founder of the Black Lives Matters movement? Because she's under some hot fire in the media, because she's done bought herself multiple multi-million dollar homes.
Yeah, but that's a good question. It's like they come out of this group. It's been like 8 months since I looked into it, but they come out of a religion called IFA, and it's like a black magic religion. And somehow they linked up with George Soros and was getting all that funding from, you know, with the Open Society money. But now they've exploded into like an iconic, I don't even know what to call them. They're like the, you know, like, you know, some of our representatives, AOC and Rasheed, they're at that level now. But this young lady, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned her. She's basically a witch that's on record saying that, you know, we need to destroy the nuclear black family unit and turn it more into something along the lines of a unisex, you know, with women in charge, whatever. I'm just making it up now, but not making it up, but trying to remember. But they want to destroy the unit, and she's part of that. And I don't know if you've been checking out the parent of the young boy that got shot in the park about 6-7 years ago. And this parent came out, the mother came out and said she is disappointed, or she said more than that. She's upset that the families who have actually lost young boys or whatever to police shootings, now this rich lady that you mentioned with BLM is getting all the money. They've raised, umpteen millions of dollars, plus that George Soros money. So this thing is going full circle now. They're having a circular shootout, you know, because the money's not being evenly distributed, you know, and it's all on the, you know, it's profited on the death of young black men or whatever, you know.
Is she necessarily a hypocrite? Because, technically she's a black woman, and apparently her life matters if she's spending all the millions of dollars on herself.
Yeah, good point. She's got a carte blanche now to all the upper crust clubs, wherever they like to hang out. She get to hang out at BET now, and you know, it's just crazy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we know BET but the boule, sold out.
What was that? I couldn't hear you.
I said, yeah, we know BET had sold out a long time ago.
Oh, man. And that was sad to me, because, you know, the guy who started it, Mr. Johnson, I think he had good intentions, but like everybody else, I don't know if you ever heard of Hollywood, Rebecca Scott, a.k.a. Hollywood. She's one of the literal founders of hip-hop, and she worked with people like the Fat Boys and the Simmons Brothers and P. Diddy before he became P. Diddy. She describes how they turned joints like BET and MTV, and basically hip-hop in general was turned from, you know, you're not as old as me, but back in the day, in the in the late '70s and the early '80s, the rival groups would get together, throw down cardboard boxes, and just start breakdancing and whatever. And that's how they would relieve their stress or their whatever differences they had. You know, if this was your corner, well, we're gonna break dance and see who's gonna control this corner. You know, instead of selling drugs and shooting it out. So,
and that guy,
AKA Holly Hood, she explained how people like Sonya Redstone, you know, one of the top, he was in everything, I guess, Sony Records, movie producer, but how he came in and spread money all over hip hop and turned it into gangster rap almost overnight. So BET got caught up in that because they started playing back in the 80s when I was in the military. When I first started watching BET, it was kind of clean and respectful. You know, it was about pro-blackness and promoting, you know, self-esteem and all that. Next thing I know, it was lascivious and as disrespectful as MTV and all the rest of them. You know, so the point I'm making is, I get a little long-winded, is all of them were bought out at some point, even Robert Johnson, I guess. You know, he buckled to the pressure. That's where the money was. You know, so.
Well, BET went through several transformations, I think, because, yeah, it was respectful at the beginning, and then, you know, and me as a teenager, you know, I tune into BET, I know I'm going to see some G-strings, some big tops, you know, bouncing around everywhere. Like, okay, yeah, this is where I'm at. But then, to this, you know, smiley guy, and just turned to like this black news propaganda stuff. So it went through several different transformations.
Oh, it really did. Well, see, in Rebecca Scott, to pay homage to her, she was actually promoting all the groups that were, you know, the big hit groups. I don't want to name them all, but people like the Fat Boys and Kool Moe Dee and all these people. You know, they were getting recognized and noticed, and this is before they start going, you know, going radical. But she was financing all these groups and flying them around the world and paying for their hotels and all that. And then they called her in one day. She said this live on, so you won't think I'm exaggerating. She told this story on Corey Holcomb 5150, you know, his radio talk show, the comedian. She told this story live. You know, and the name of the show was it was called the Corey Holcomb 5150 show, and then the subtitle was Hip Hop in the Illuminati. So the whole theme of the show was her exposing the Illuminati's involvement in hip hop. So she said right there on that show that they, as soon as they told her that she was going to have to start financing all of these top artists. We're talking top artists. I can't remember them all off the top, but they're going to start financing them by her selling crack cocaine in her neighborhood. And she said live on the air that she did it for a little while, but then because she was so committed, you know, she already had bookings and all that from everywhere to China to Japan to wherever, all over Europe. So she had to do it or her whole, you know, system would have collapsed. But then she realized, I'm destroying my community, so she stopped doing it. You know, they gave her 10 solid years in prison and tried to kill her. We're talking Rebecca Scott, a.k.a. Holly Hood. Everybody should go check her out. She tells the whole story of how hip-hop was converted into gangster rap. She tells the best version of it. I mean, you can hear other versions of it from people like Professor Griff and whoever else you respect, but she gives the complete description of it, breakdown of the timelines and who sold out, when they sold out, how they sold out. She implicates all of the top artists that have grown old that are my age now. She leaves no stone unturned. Rebecca Scott now, Hollywood.
I've got a theory here because I grew up with the gangster hip hop. You know, Kool Moe Dee and Fat Boy Styles before my time. I grew up with DMX. I grew up with the you know, Hot Boys. I grew up with you know, Juvenile, No Limit Soldiers. You know, these are the people I grew up with. Now, I actually have a theory here as to why they killed DMX, because the industry today they don't even do gangster hip hop that well. I mean, right now it's I got money, I sell drugs, I got hoes, and that's it. It's all about the bling bling. And so the gangster part of it got phased out to me. And, you know, in today's day and age where we have old Biden doing all these false flag mass shooting operations to try and take our guns, you know, to have DMX come out again talking that, you know, boom, 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 ATF at the door, shootout, you know, that goes against the narrative. Because they don't want us shooting it out with the feds. And so they killed him.
I've been listening to some of the videos of people coming out about him. I was listening to a young lady today who's in the industry. She said that she actually got access to the documents from one of the people who were medically handling him. She didn't give his name, proving that he was vaccinated to death. I saw that today on YouTube. This is the young lady, what's her name? Jaguar, the female Jaguar who sang with so many different groups. I can't remember where she started, but she said she actually had access. Have you heard about that yet?
Well, fully vaccinated means he got two shots, and you can't be fully vaccinated all at once. You got to get one shot and then one shot 6 months later. So,
I got to get this clear. No, I didn't say that she said that he got both shots. She just said that she had documentation that he had been vaccinated and he tested positive for COVID earlier. So that's the only part that I heard her say. Now, there's another video where she said he got two shots. I didn't go to that second video yet, but she said that the person who was handling his case, one of the medical aides, or she didn't say what his title was, or she didn't say if it was a he or she, but she did make it clear that she has the physical documented proof that he actually was basically murdered, I guess you could say. She didn't say that. She, you know, they always want to act. She made it clear before she went into the breakdown. She said, I don't want to get into conspiracy theories. See, they always do that cowardly move, too. It's like, look, either you're going to commit 100% or you're not. Just stay out of it. Don't talk tough. Don't be a rapper. Don't be a gangster. And then now that it might be your turn to take that bullet or that raid in the night, now you want to act like you want to diss conspiracy theorists. Because it's too much of that. You know, we respect people that don't really respect us. And, anyway, you know, I've heard DMX say other things, you know, that related to the secret society, Illuminati, whatever. It's been a while.
Yeah, because he was having his problems with the courts and how he was being made examples of and things like that, how he came out and talked about that.
Okay. Yeah, he was an angry man, but at the same time, you know, I want to respect DMX. But when you got people like Professor Griff, who's been, you know, they've tried to assassinate him, and they assassinate him several times, I tend to can't get on his bandwagon because, look, if you got something to say, say it, man. Don't, you know, even Kanye, these guys, they give you these little titillating hints and, you know, that leave you guessing, is he with us or against us? Is he going to, you know, he's like Trump, is he? Is he going to expose the whole game or not? Or does he think his life is more valuable than ours? So I don't want to disrespect the man. He's dead. But you can't talk tough. You know, I grew up in a world where if you're talking tough, you got to show that you're tough. You got to have some knuckles. You know, don't pull out no knife. Right. Don't pull out no gun. And these guys, they, you know, on wax or whatever, CDs, they all talk tough. And they talk about their hoods and all that. But at the end of the day, they're always more concerned about just them, just their safety. They don't care what the Illuminati do. Like this lady, Marsha Lynn Oslot, once it came out that she was poisoning the little black boys with MMR, you would have thought every black leader would have came out. And remember, I don't know if you looked into Charles Thompson, William Thompson, the Center for Disease Whistleblower. He made it clear that before he went to Robert Kennedy Jr., he went to the top black leaders and tried to get them to come forward. Rappers, you know, people like Michael Jordan, Bill Cosby, Oprah, and none of them would come forward with the Center for Disease 340% increase in autism spectrum. None of them would take it. So I'm sure at some point, DMX heard that somewhere. He was a very intelligent guy. If you listen to him talk, he sounded like he was up to snuff. And I know Kanye is, but none of them never come out with the real whole shebang. They just give it.
Well, and see, you know what? That's the problem. That's the problem. You know, we went from Martin Luther King to looking at our entertainers as black leaders. These are entertainers.
Yeah, that's all they are.
They're not supposed to be our leaders. We don't have any black leaders right now.
Well,
I mean, Jesse Jackson was supposed to be, but, you know.
Well, see, I don't want to use that broad brush because, and I'm not to cut you off, but I got to go in a couple of minutes. But I understand what you're saying, and even Dick Gregory says in some of his videos he didn't hang out with entertainers. But it was like, hey, Dick Gregory, you was an entertainer. But I understand what he meant because he sacrificed millions of dollars to, you know, expose this underworld called Illuminati, globalism, whatever. So I'm always careful when I talk about the entertainers. But we can say for sure the biggest ones, the ones with the most money, the ones who will never go bankrupt. Muhammad Ali would have been homeless if it hadn't have been for the Muslims and other community people helping him out. Even Joe Frazier helped him out. But these guys nowadays, they got so much money, they will never be homeless, you know, destitute. Their families will never and they still don't say nothing. So I always like to make clear that when I'm talking about, you know, entertainers or, you know, just celebrities in general, these guys just don't have the spine and the love for the black community that they really say they got. They don't have it at the level that the Dick Gregorys and the Muhammad Ali's and, like you said, the Reverend Martin Luther King's had. They're not willing to die. They definitely wasn't ready to do what Malcolm did, you know, and people like, you know, I don't know if you ever listened to the black, you know, I don't know if you call them Black News or Sonnetta TV, but it's a lot of black intellectuals on YouTube, and they cover almost every subject matter you can think of. They talk about, I mean, these guys have photographic memory almost, you know, and they talk about all the different sciences. They talk about all the food, you know, the level that is being poisoned. They talk about all the different religions. And these are the kind of guys, even though I look at them as black racists because they always go to that race card about, well, white people are nothing but Neanderthals and they're in the Bible. The Bible looks at them as Edomites and so that part of it, I just don't really take to heart because, you know, they kind of like are reverse racists in a way. When you start, you know, dismissing white folks and Jews, as a matter of fact, they even say they're the original Jews. And I can't completely dismiss that because if that's what the record shows, that's what the record shows.
Hebrews, you know, yes, we are the original Hebrews.
Right. See, I can't debate that. But leave the hate, and people aren't responsible for where they were born and who what their lineage is, and that's what they tend to go there. But the point I'm making is they are not afraid to talk about the ills of the government, from 9/11 to the vaccines. So I respect them more than I do our celebrities. I respect them more than I do people like Kanye. Now, Jim Brown, for instance, I respect him because I saw what he did. I lived in L.A. for a few years. I saw what he tried to do. He's just gotten old and worn out, so he's tired of arguing, you know, with these, we'll just call them radical blacks. But people like Don King tried to point out, look, I've been working with Donald Trump for 50 years, and we all know that. He was promoting fights and everything else with him, along with people like Al Sharpton. But these guys speak with, you know, they speak with a more legitimate tongue than these the rest of these celebrities. Like, Charles Barkley will come out and say, he'll give you a little tidbit about how both sides of the House is using race and tension and all that to divide us. But he never completes it. You know, they just can't never find the bottom line somehow. So I don't respect none of them. Shaq, you name them. I just can't respect them.
Well, I'm a young cat. I'm the youngest host on this network, only being 35. But I love it when my elders come in and try to learn me a thing or two. I've always had older friends. I've always been a part of the older crowd, and I love it when people fill me in on the history, because being 35. Coming into this game, I was 28 when I started this thing. So,
well, you got a lot of wisdom, and you bring on wise guests. Plus you've been listening to people like Pat Miller and all them. Well, I tell you what, man, if you don't appreciate nothing else I said, we got to know who the enemy in the house is. And I'm telling you, man, whoever's out there listening, this Black Boule group. You know, a lot of them, like I said, the Barclays of the world, they just kind of stumble into it just by way of having athletic ability, whatever, the Kanye. But this chosen group, this force, this intellectual superclass called the Black, you got to look at them and understand they are the most wicked people that we could possibly be associated with, because they know all the psychological maneuvers. They know how to really convince us that racism is our biggest problem, even though we already have, we already have the past to prove that no matter how intense racism is, we can get past it if we just clean up our own neighborhoods, stop killing each other in record numbers, stop, doing what we do to each other, and racism won't have the effect that it has. Hold on one second. I'll be right here. Yeah, they calling me, and I'm at the big house. I'm the house Negro over here. They need me to get in there and start mopping this. we need to clean up our own act, a random shooting every now and then. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm glad you're working. I'm glad that you are, in the times of COVID. I'm glad that a man like you, with the wealth of knowledge that you have, you are still kicking it. You're taking care of yourself and your family. I'm happy for you, and I'm blessed to hear you and have you on the show. And keep doing your thing, and definitely don't be a stranger to the show. Keep listening and keep calling in. I love everything you got to say.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I want you to know, too, when I walked in there and they first started implementing that mask, I said, I'm not wearing a mask, so you can fire me right now. And Melanie didn't fire me. I haven't worn a mask not one day in there. I got to throw that in there. So I'm not a hypocrite. Have a nice day, brother.
Thank you. You have a nice day, too. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate you.
See, Judas. Judas is the big problem here. Those of our own people who betray us, I love my white people, and and I know we hit some high numbers with the listeners this week, especially since I kept saying the word Republican. It seems like we get 10 more listeners every time I say Republican. Republican, Republican, Republican. I myself am not a Republican. I'm anachronistic. I just happen to have, similar goals to, maintain a certain level of dignity and freedom. So I think we're all allies here. do we still have... The other callers on the line? We only have a few minutes in the show.
Andy's here.
Okay, let's throw Andy on. Go ahead.
Well, hey, thanks, V. No, I really just want to be brief. I mean, that was an incredible caller. Where's he actually from? He said something about Austin. It sounds like a guy
he's in
heard
Austin,
from
Texas.
California.
Yeah, he's in Austin,
no
Texas.
Kidding. Well, no, he's a quite knowledgeable individual, and he's quite into, it's just awesome. I sat there on the phone. I forgot it was on the phone. I thought I was just listening on my headphones. Anyway, what I wanted to say to the people, since we don't have a whole lot of time here, I just want to let people know that you don't have any recourse right now. You've been bought out. People have paid, all these people in congresses all around the country, in all the states and all the populations that really matter. They've bought all the people that you can go to. So all these different solutions, they're calling them with air quotes, that you can go and you can file some sort of complaint or some lawsuit or something. It's not going to happen. You will find some that will go through. Okay, I don't want to say this is dire straits because they didn't buy everybody. But most of these people are bought out. Your congressmen, they're bought out. You can see that. Look, not a single person in Congress stood up against the election fraud. Not that I wanted Trump. I mean, Trump walked us into COVID-19. I mean, what do we owe him? He walked us in there. He brought us warp speed. He brought us Dr. Fauci. He put him on a pedestal. He saw that the election got stolen from him. He walked away. Exit stage left. We're out of here. And he didn't fight for it. I mean, come on, people. So, look. I'm being too hard.
I think you've been too hard.
I'm being too hard, Dean. Well, hey, Trump was, you're fired, and he didn't fire nobody. He's the you're fired guy, and he didn't fire nobody.
Well, I've got a guy who has followed Trump's career quite extensively, and he can tell you all the good he's done. And I'm going to get him on the show. TLB TV, well, TLB Media Project founder, Roger Landry, my mentor.
I like that gentleman.
He can tell you all the good Trump's done. Now, he's not a fan of Trump, but he's definitely a Trump believer. And I do, hey, if there's a Trump 2024 campaign coming up, I know where my vote is going. Now, that'll be twice I have voted Republican in my life, as coming from a Democratic home. So that should tell you something right there. But not that our vote means too much anyways, as we have seen in the past election there, election fraud, and the media shucking the job. You know, 14% of Biden voters said they would not have voted for Biden had they knew about the Hunter situation. And the media swept that under the rug as much as they could. So the media manipulated the election. Forget about the voter fraud. Yep. The media in itself, the mainstream media, chose our president for us. And who owns the mainstream media? The deep state and the shadow government. So they have to get Biden in there because Biden is once again pushed for gun control. The COVID crisis, which we know Biden's not doing anything about except for want to push King Bill's vaccines onto us. Yeah, so a lot of good that does us,
Mr.
right?
Mr. Gates.
yeah. Mr. Gates. Yeah, that, you know, people talk about Pizzagate, Watergate. The most dangerous gate we've got is Bill Gates.
Absolutely.
Well, Andy, I know.
Round up the show there, Chief. I'll talk to you later, man.
Yeah, thank you for calling in. We're going to have an explosive week next week because, Will Turbitt is going to be rejoining the show after his trip to Chicago ends, and he's going to come back with some wild information about what he's been up to. You know, it's nice having a man out there in the field, because not a lot of people can say that they have that. Not in independent media. I got a guy on the ground. I got a guy that can report from wherever he's at, if he chooses to do so, or just come back with a full report. Which is, again, I don't know too many independent media people who have that set up. But for you guys, I made it a point to get Will back on the show so that we could have that set up. That way we can hear the truth straight from the horse's mouth. Not that he's a horse or anything, but boy, does he gallop like one all over the country. Woo! yeah, so guys, with that said, hey, it's been another episode of the Red Pill Hardcore Radio Show with me, your host, V. And also, I didn't forget about the Tanzania information, but I hope to come back with that next week as well. So I want to dig a little bit more into that before I make that a full-blown conspiracy. But anyhow, yes. Guys, I got to wrap up the show. So, guys, just remember, in the land of surveillance, man with third eye is king. So please educate yourselves.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.